Gasoline is extremely volatile. It has a very low ignition point. It can be ignited with a very small spark.
Officials work to clean up another fuel spill in Aniak. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a look at changes at the federal agency that regulates offshore drilling in Alaska.
We are going to try to reform the way we do business virtually across the board.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years. Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by the Doyon family of companies working together to build Alaska's future.
Offices and homes in portions of Aniak were evacuated this morning because of a gasoline leak. KYUK's Shane Iverson has more.
As far as anyone can tell, the leak is ongoing at the gas station owned by Crowley Petroleum Distribution in the Kuskokwim River village of Aniak. The leak was discovered by a Crowley Morning employee who noticed a strong gasoline smell. The worker discovered a leak of unleaded gasoline going from a tank to the secondary containment area, and he reported that he saw bubbles coming up from the base of the tank. The leak was reported to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation in Bethel Monday morning. Specialist Bob Carlson.
The tank has approximately 6,500 gallons of unleaded gasoline in it, and that continues to be released as far as anyone can tell.
The leak is the second for Crowley in Aniak in as many months. Last March, 7,000 gallons of diesel fuel was spilled at a different tank farm about a mile downriver. All of that was believed to have been contained in a liner. Carlson says this spill is different for several reasons. For one, the gasoline spill occurring now is located within a populated area, and the fact that it's gasoline and not diesel makes it more troubling.
Gasoline is extremely volatile. It has a very low ignition point. It can be ignited with a very small spark.
It also contains a lot of benzene and other poisonous chemicals.
You don't want people exposed to those to breathe them in.
Local agencies in Aniak evacuated people from within 1,000 feet of the spill site. That evacuation includes homes as well as the post office and the Gusbuck School District office. It also included Crowley employees. The fuel distribution company told the DEC that they have contracted an outside company to handle the cleanup effort. Carlson says they hope that company will be on site by this afternoon. He says gasoline cleanups can take longer to initiate than diesel ones because the equipment is more specific.
For this sort of spill, you need what's called intrinsically safe equipment, which is equipment that will not create a spark and ignite the fumes on site.
Carlson says it's too early to know how much gas has been released. The spill occurred in a lined containment area, which is designed to keep it from seeping into the nearby ground. Carlson says his office will inspect that liner sometime later this spring or summer. For KYUK, I'm Shane Iverson.
More than a year after the Gulf of Mexico oil spill, there is at least one visible difference at the Alaska Office of the Federal Agency that regulates offshore drilling. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Regulation and Enforcement has a new acting director in its Anchorage office and expects to announce a permanent director in the next 30 days. Bigger changes are in the works for the agency, and those changes will be influenced by an Alaskan who is hoping to bring increased attention to Arctic ocean drilling issues. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, Regulation, and Enforcement is in the middle of a huge transformation right now.
We are going to try to reform the way we do business virtually across the board.
That's Michael Bromwich, the director of BOMRA, as his agency is called. He was sworn into the job last June after the Deepwater Horizon spill prompted the Obama administration to replace the Minerals Management Service with BOMRA. The old agency was accused of being too close to the oil industry.
We have had this agency investigated, reviewed, studied by more outside entities than any other agency in the federal government over the last year, maybe even over the last 10 years. So we've had a lot of people looking at us and evaluating what our weaknesses are and what we need to change, including changes that will affect the culture and improve the culture.
In Alaska, Bromwich says those changes include a new acting director, Dr. James Kendall. A federal government report last year criticized the way environmental reviews were conducted in Alaska. Bromwich has praise for Kendall and says one of the reasons he was appointed was because he used to lead the agency's environmental studies program. Bromwich says it was an important step in demonstrating the Bureau wants to expand the role of environmental analysis in the Alaska office.
There have been a number of observers that have said that our people in the Alaska office have felt that their work has not been sufficiently highly valued. That's obviously troubling to me. And so I want to make sure, and I know Dr. Kendall wants to make sure that the environmental scientists and environmental analysts in the Alaska office recognize that their work is valued and that their work plays a role in the critical decisions that the agency is making.
Bromwich says the Bureau as a whole has been chronically underfunded, but Congress is starting to provide a significant amount of additional funding to help institute reforms. Bromwich wants the agency to do more inspection on oil rigs, do more environmental analysis, and add more staff to review exploration plans. He also wants to develop a stronger enforcement policy. He says Congress should raise the current fine limit, which is $35,000 per incident per day.
Which, to you and me, may sound like a lot of money, but to oil and gas companies, it's not. And so if we want there to be a deterrent effect in the fines that are imposed for serious regulatory violations, we need to raise that fine level.
As Bromwich continues his reform effort at the agency, he'll be getting advice from an Alaskan, Lois Epstein. She's Arctic Program Director for the Wilderness Society and was appointed recently to the Ocean Energy Safety Advisory Committee. It's a new permanent body that will provide guidance to BOMRA on improving offshore drilling safety, well containment, and spill response. Epstein agrees Bromwich should focus on upgrading enforcement. She says large, very public fines when operators make mistakes could have an important deterrent effect.
We need to be able to distinguish who the good operators are and who the bad operators are. You know, for too long, we've had people saying that BP was an outlier, that what they did, they wouldn't do, but we don't really know that. We don't know who's doing a good job and who isn't.
Epstein says her main focus on the committee will be making sure Arctic drilling issues get the attention they deserve.
I'm concerned that they haven't focused enough attention on the Arctic and the differences in the Arctic compared with what the Gulf conditions are like. The industry has made the case that drilling in the Arctic is not all that different or difficult. However, there are conditions in the Arctic that are just not at all found in the Gulf.
She says the agency is way behind in terms of having the tools it needs to prevent large oil spills. And she predicts it will take years to develop new regulations aimed at making sure a deepwater horizon type incident never happens again.
In terms of regulations and enforcement and transparency, BOMRA has a long way to go before the public and Alaska Natives and others are likely to feel comfortable that all the right tools are in place to ensure there aren't going to be major problems with Arctic Ocean drilling.
Epstein isn't saying there can't ever be drilling in the Arctic, but she thinks the conditions there require a lot more science on the basic environment and better spill response capabilities than currently exist. Bromwich agrees the Arctic is an environment that deserves special attention, and he says the agency will be reviewing oil company spill response plans for the region very closely. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the largest graduating class for Alaska's only tribal college.
As soon as you stop seeking out new things and exploring what the world around you has to offer, you cheat yourself out of your own life.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. One answer to our state's declining oil production? Port McKenzie Rail Project. The link from the Alaska Railroad to a deepwater port will bring billions in mineral production and thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
Research shows youth violence and bullying are linked to suicide. 12 Alaska villages are taking part in a project to reduce youth violence, bullying, and suicide through activities based on traditional culture. Native Aspirations is designed to help reservations and Alaska Native villages create safety nets. About 170 project participants met in Anchorage last week to share what's working for them. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Native Aspirations Project Director Iris Prettypaint is a Montana Blackfeet tribal member and descendant of the Crow Nation. She says not every Native American community can get a $50,000 federal grant to prevent youth violence, bullying, and suicide. To qualify, Prettypaint says a community has to be nominated by federal health stakeholders such as federal and state agencies.
We don't work with communities and villages that are doing well or that have a lot of resources or that have a strong infrastructure. We work with the most remote, the most needy, the most isolated communities.
At the community meeting, one villager said there had been 7 youth suicides in 2 years in his Western Alaska village of 700 people. Alaska is among the top 10 states with the highest rates of suicide. Like Alaska, Nebraska has high rates of suicide. Despite those statistics, Nebraska Winnebago Tribal Council member Julie Bassett says tribal members there didn't think there was a problem.
The biggest challenges are the denial and resistance that we are even affected by violence, bullying, and suicide. I guess it's like if they don't feel that it's broken, why fix it? However, our tribe has declared a state of emergency to provide a light, I guess you would say, to shed this light on our community, to say, hey, wake up.
Bassett says the Winnebago are using Native Aspirations funds to coordinate activities and training.
We are currently having talking circles with our youth, outings such as just having the youth come together and share, getting the families together. We are going to be holding Train the Trainer workshop because I believe that the answers come from within. So we want to train our own people to make a difference in addressing historical trauma, anger management, identity issues.
Prettypaint says because each community is creating its own solutions, each measures success differently.
Saving one young person's life one day may be success, or it may be that you just got a $500,000 grant to continue what you're doing, which might be success. Another success could be that you got a group of people to work together that in the past had never come to the table on mental health issues for young people. So there's a wide range of success.
Northern Arapaho tribal member Carmen Thomas told youth and community coordinators they need to recognize their own ability to inspire change.
Don't look outside of your communities for that help, because you yourself, each of you that's sitting at each table, you're the leader that your reservation or your community has been waiting for.
Native Aspirations is funded by the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration. It started 6 years ago and is funded through 2013. In Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Alaska's only tribal college is sending off the largest graduating class in its history. Illisovgik College held its spring 2011 commencement ceremony in Barrow Friday. And as KBRW's Jake Neer reports, officials say it's students' fortitude, not higher enrollment, that's leading to more graduates.
37 new graduates walked between the Baleen and across the stage Friday night for Illisovgik College's 2011 commencement ceremony. That's out of almost 70 students that received a degree, certificate, or GED this term. Administrators say that's the biggest graduating class they've ever seen. In fact, that's up from only 25 students last year. So essentially, the college has almost tripled its number of graduates in a year. New president Brooke Gondera took over the top spot at Ilisavik in January.
Things are just moving right along. Enrollment is growing. Of course, we had a big graduating class. We're offering tons of workforce development courses. I mean, things are really robust and going really, really well at the college right now. I'm very excited.
But the registrar's office says enrollment is only slightly up compared to past years. That small increase doesn't account for the nearly 180% jump in graduation. But college officials say more students are coming back to finish programs instead of dropping out. They say they can't speculate as to what's causing students to be more determined in getting their certificates, degrees, and GEDs. But two students on stage Friday were able to find that focus through each other's encouragement.
Some of you may know we have a mother and daughter graduating together this year.
Maud Hobson and her daughter Leslie Hobson both graduated with AAS degrees in business management. They say it's great to be walking across the stage together, but if the timing didn't work out that way, it wouldn't be any less special.
I don't think we'd feel no different. We'd still, you know, congratulate each other and feel the same way about each other too.
Yeah, even we're, you know, when we're not going to school, we still show each other what we learn outside or within the home.
The commencement address Friday was given by Olympic snowboarder Kalen Chithluk-Sifsoff of Bethel. She has both Yupik and Inupiaq Eskimo heritage. She spoke on how that background taught her about survival through education.
The moment that we stopped learning is really the moment that we stopped living, kind of. A long time ago, the only tools for survival were our own instincts and capabilities. And those who decided to learn and seek knowledge of the world around them survived, and those who didn't perished with the climate. So now and today, as soon as you stop seeking out new things and exploring what the world around you has to offer, you cheat yourself out of your own life.
The last speaker of the night was alumnus of the year, Etta Paycock Fournier. She also spoke at length about how education and learning allowed her to thrive despite many setbacks.
When I say I am fortunate, it is with a humble heart that I am here to say life is not easy. Some of us grew up in dysfunctional homes, survived incest, domestic violence, and suicide. But by the grace of God, there go I. It has been a wonderful journey because people have paved my way for my future. I am so glad for our ancestors, educated North Slope people, and the people who make North Slope home from all over the world. Come and help with our local education.
Ilisavik officials say about a dozen students earned GED diplomas this term, more than 40 earned certificates, and 11 earned associate's degrees. As well as being the largest graduating class to date, this was also the commencement ceremony with one of the highest participation rates from graduates, with nearly 40 walking across the stage. That's twice the usual participation rate. In Barrow, I'm Jake Neer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Fairbanks is getting closer to seeing a downtown food co-op. The member-owned community market may benefit from a low-interest loan from a new economic development loan fund being established by Golden Valley Electric. The utility has applied for a $300,000 United States Department of Agriculture grant and is kicking in $60,000 of its own money to establish the fund. GVEA President and CEO Brian Newton says helping the food co-op fits in with the utility's mission.
Seven cooperative principles say two things. One, we have concern for the community, which this project would help in do that because of the economic development. It also says that we should foster cooperative forms of business. And so again, this is a cooperative form of business, so it aligns very well with Golden Valley's mission.
Newton says if Golden Valley gets the grant, it will be the first utility to set up an economic development loan program in Alaska, but he says such funds are common among utilities in the lower 48. The dollars GVEA is contributing will come from unclaimed capital credits of former members. The Fairbanks Community Cooperative Market has been in the works for several years. The plan is for a member-owned store that sells organic and whole foods, including local produce. Co-op Market Project Manager Mary Christensen says the $360,000 loan from GVEA will represent about a third of what's needed to open the store. She says combined with a bank loan and member support, finances are looking good.
All the pieces of the financing are going to come together and we're going to get this store open. We have close to $400,000 in the bank from member loans and membership equity, but we don't want to use those funds irresponsibly. We want to wait until all the funds for the project are secure, and then we call the project a go.
The Fairbanks Community Market has secured an option to lease a portion of the old Foodland supermarket building downtown. Christensen says the total $1.2 million startup budget will cover renovation of the 6,000 square foot store space, equipment, inventory, and hiring a general manager. She says things will be on hold until Golden Valley hears back on the USDA grant this fall, but renovation work will begin as soon as the money is secured. She says that would set the co-op market up for opening sometime between January and April 2012. Farmers and hunters argued last week over what to do about damage to crops caused by the Delta bison herd. The two sides were able to come to consensus on a solution to the 30-year-old problem, and as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, it involves a lot of fencing.
Rather than fencing them in, a working group of hunters and farmers in January decided it would be best to fence them out of agricultural areas. The group's members voted 5-1 to build some 160 miles of fencing to accomplish that at an estimated cost of $8 million. The group also voted to reduce the size of the herd from its present 360 animals to somewhere between 275 to 325 before calving season. One of the farmers was still arguing that fencing the bison in is the best solution. That's Mike Pascal, president of the local Farm Bureau, who says he doesn't understand why hunters don't like the idea of fencing in the bison.
What you're telling me is you want an easier hunt, and what we're suggesting is if you fence the animals in, it would be an easier hunt, so I'm not sure why there's opposition in the hunting community to fencing the animals.
Vince Holton was among several of the hunters who strongly objected to Pascal's suggestion that they were looking for an easy hunt. They said they were just trying to make a point about being able to contact landowners.
I was asked to give a message here. Sportsman's Fish and Wildlife Alaska, 2,900 members, abjectly opposed to farmers' plan to fence in the bison.
Holton, who lives in Fairbanks, says it's not just hunters who would object to the idea of fencing the bison in. Many Alaskans have come to treasure the presence of bison, and they're not going to like the idea.
There's probably 400,000 or 500,000 people in this state that are going to go absolutely nuts if we put a fence around those bison.
Despite all the back and forth, the issue was pretty much settled by the working group's January decision to build a network of fencing to keep the bison out. Steve DuBois, the Delta area biologist and co-author of the Delta Management Plan update, says that represents real progress.
What I'm detecting here tonight is sort of a change in the thinking of the farming community.
Randy Rogers, a wildlife planner with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Fairbanks office, said after the meeting that now the biggest challenge will be to get the legislature's attention to act on the issue and then appropriate the money to pay for a solution. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Ray Mala, the first Alaska movie star who happened to be Inupiat, is being honored in towns around the state in a film festival. KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes has more.
Ray Wise Mala was handsome, and he took Hollywood by storm. He appeared in 25 movies from the 1920s through the early 50s, working both in front and behind the cameras. Now, 80-plus years later, screenings of his major films are taking place in communities around the state. It's part of a film festival that's helping kick off the release of a new biography of the Inupiat movie star. It's titled Eskimo Star, From the Tundra to Tinseltown, The Ray Mala Story. Mala was born in 1906 in Candle, Alaska, a small village between Deering and Buckland off of the Kotzebue Sound. His mother was Inupiat and his father was a Russian-Jewish trader. Mala's interest in the camera started early, and he eventually found his way to Hollywood. By his 20s, he found himself acting, and by the age of 27, he became the first non-white actor to play a leading role in a Hollywood film. The movie was titled Eskimo. Eskimo was filmed by MGM in 1931 in the Nome and Teller region. The classic black-and-white movie stars Mala and a mostly Inupiat cast. It's subtitled and depicts a traditional Arctic village with several Hollywood touches like fur teepees. In one scene, villagers are excited about walrus that show up. In the movie, the village sees its first white man, which doesn't go well. Mala plays a young hunter. Not all of Mala's films were about Alaska Natives. He played all types of ethnicities on screen.
They had him play everything from Chinese to Polynesian, so there were some ones where he was in the South Pacific and did movies there, and then other ones where he was like a detective kind of thing.
Renee Athanis is the Cultural Center coordinator in Bethel. She says the films she chose for the Bethel Festival are mostly Alaskan-based, the earliest of which is How Death Was Cheated in the Great Race to Nome, which was filmed in 1925. Mala was the cinematographer.
He was at the very beginning of the film industry, and he was a cameraman, and he went down to Hollywood and as a cameraman, loved taking movies and got in front of the camera as well, and off he went.
I didn't even know films were shooting in Alaska back then for Hollywood.
Right. These were actually filmed in the 30s and the 40s and 50s, which is amazing. You know, up in Nome and Teller and Barrow, it had to be pretty minimal at the time. So it was the beginning of the film industry for Alaska, I guess.
Mala died in 1952 at the young age of 46. The Ray Mala Film Festival is part of a statewide celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Besides Bethel, screenings are happening this spring in Barrow, Kotzebue, Nome, Point Hope, Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. The dates vary depending on location. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Shane Iverson and Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Jake Neer in Barrow, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Tim Ellis in Delta. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Penn Air, providing scheduled service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations online at pennair.com.
And by
Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.